Ramana Maharshi said, a guru is the spirit of guidance. Sometimes they can take a human form or a non-human form, depending on your need. Mm-hmm. And they do that to all creatures, all beings, even beyond the veil of death and other worlds. And so what we're trying to achieve by coming to a place like Arunachala and becoming familiar and taking up a practice and just trying to change, the word is change. Mm-hmm. The Buddha said what you're really after is a heightened mind. In other words, a mind that first sees higher things and then afterwards can live in higher realms. While the suffering of the world and the body suffering and the needs and desires and all that go on. So beings like Ramana Maharshi, when he was leaving his body and his people were becoming heartbroken and saying, what are we going to do? You're dying.
Yeah.
He said, you know, that famous quote, he said, you pay too much attention to the body. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here. Where can I go? And that saying, or that actual comment that he made, can be taken mystically, romantically, or just kind of a cute aphorism, but he really meant it. And he is a being that is not touched by life or death, is working to uplift people here, uplift creatures here, uplift beings in all different heavens. And so he is really, in a sense, the embodiment of grace. Mm-hmm. People say, the God is love, but it's grace, love, mercy. And so he said something very similar to Sri Ramakrishna, that grace is blowing in the wind. Our job is to unfurl our sail and catch it. Sri Ramana Maharshi said, grace is, period, just grace is. Our job is to become receptive to it. So, the idea is becoming receptive to grace. Now, Ananda Moy Ma said something very similar. She said, grace is to the level that you can perceive it, it fulfills you. You can see grace on kind of a level where you just have peace of mind. If that's where Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. If that's all you ask for, that's what you'll get. But if you say, I want change, I want a heightened mind, I want to live a true spiritual existence, in the real sense, not the theoretical or philosophical sense, where a lot of people here, they say, I am the self, there's nothing left to do. They'll, in a sense, pull quotes from Ramana Maharshi and leave out where he's talking about the effort and path to get there. And they'll just say, this is it. So this is the idea. This is why we're here, because this is what's going on. And it is, in the beginning, very disoriented. I can tell you something now that's going to be very comforting. It'll get more disoriented as you become familiar. And as you say, yes, I know now the path.
Yeah.
Now it's a matter of trying to arduously walk the path. And we find ourselves diverging on little avenues to the right and to the left as our wants and desires and circumstances pull us. So we have to find kind of what you might say is a pole star, that star that we can navigate from. And Ramana Maharshi very clearly set out what it is. Mm-hmm. And it is a life of sadhana, prayer, and, his verses to Arunachala, where he said, thou fiery gem, O Arunachala, burn up the dross in me. Then at one point, another verse, he said, O Arunachala, do not leave me half-baked. Finish the job. Now this is him mm-hmm. speaking. It's almost like it is God speaking to another incarnation of God. But the idea is, it's a lesson. It's a guidance that we should be following after. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the great book, Imitation of Christ, mm-hmm. the imitation of Bhagavan. That's what we're after. But you have to be careful because, especially in this place, as well as all places, Mother Maya is very active.
Yeah.
And you can really be kind of fall into a rut. Because, you know, We all suffer. This world's a fierce world. If you just want peace or a little bliss, you can get it easily.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you have a question?
I don't know. I guess what I appreciate about Byron so much was that he would meet people where they were at, but yet at the same time I felt like he was very similar to the Buddha to me in the sense that he sort of like no compromise. Like he was very there's compromise, but he was very sincere. It was like, we can talk about all this.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And on every level of his being, there was no compromise.
Yeah.
And in fact, hand me that book, and maybe I'll find it in Arthur Arslan's book, The Teaching of Ramana Maharshi in his own words. Bhagavan is talking about, the devotee said, I want to be further enlightened. Should I try to make no effort at all? And Bhagavan said, now it is impossible for you to be without effort. When you go deeper, it is impossible for you to make effort. The devotee said, what is the difference between meditation and samadhi or absorption in the self? And Bhagavan said, it's interesting. We're talking about the Bhagavan who in fact, Arthur Osborne said about him, he conquered and never compromised. And actually, when he said those words, I'll finish with this, but you see, this is one thing I do. I'm like a train station. I'll start. But I'll come back. This is important because we opened up, you know, at random. What happened was, so now I'm diverging from the book. When Bhagavan left his body, and he was in the Mahasamadhi shrine, people were expecting, when they brought his body out, to see the essence of pure beauty and, you know, freedom and pure enlightenment. Arthur Osborne was there. And he said that he was inside, and then they started to bring him out. And he said you could see his face, the lines on his face of struggle. It wasn't him, in a sense, the self or the enlightened being. Mm-hmm. He was in a body.
Yeah.
Okay? Like us, we're in a body. So again, Bhagavan is teaching us, saying when you're in the body, even if you have the highest form of realization, the body causes its own struggle. And so he said you could even see the lines on Bhagavan's face of the, now that he's just now freshly left his body, of struggle. And then Arthur Osborne said this. He said, then almost within an hour, it all transformed. And it all kind of like came into this kind of beautiful face. But he said, just prior to this transformation, he said, you could see in his face the undeniable fact of one who conquered and never compromised. So, there's two aspects of this. Since you said very, very beautifully, he never compromised, but also he conquered. Mm-hmm. So how did he conquer? And what is what he can? He after age 16, there was nothing left for him to do. He even said that state that he achieved was full, undiminished, and never changed. But if you read one of the books by Kunjaswami was one of Bhagavan's really close disciples and attendants. The book, you should maybe get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Living with the Master. Okay, Living with the Master by Kunjaswami. There is a place there where someone asked Sri Ramana Maharshi, you receive, they're saying to him, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because I don't have the book in front of me, mm-hmm. You receive that full awareness or awakening or enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. The word Buddha or Buddho means the awakened one. It was already there, just in a sense manifested. You receive that. Then you spent a lot of struggle in the Patala Lingam, in the main temple, which you should go to. And then he went to Virupaksha Cave and spent nearly a decade and a half or more there great austerity. Then he moved to Skandashram, and he was more austere.
Yeah.
So the question was, why did you live such an austere life, or seemingly austere life? What was the purpose? And Bhagavan actually said, and the English word they use it, that translates, because he spoke in Tamil, and the English word really is not a real English word, but it's an adjective, very, very conveyance of what the message is. Bhagavan said that all this went on as if not from his own sankalpa or his own will, but it just manifested to concretize that experience. So first it's a matter of attaining it, and then making it solid.
Mm-hmm.
And with us, it's really the three spirits, through the attaining it by grace, and then living a life of, you know, more and more and more. Mm-hmm. So to go on now, Bhagavan is talking again from in the teaching of Sri Ramana Maharshi from his own words by Arthur Osman, in the chapter From Theory to Practice. Bhagavan says, meditation is initiated and sustained by a conscious effort of the mind. When such effort entirely subsides, then it is called samadhi. So in other words, effort is first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which
counts. But then, Bhagavan is going to say this.
Yeah.
If you can keep still without engaging in any other pursuits, well and good. But if that cannot be done, what is the use of remaining inactive only with regard to realization? So long as you are obliged to be active, do not give up the attempt to realize the self. Now Bhagavan says, meditation is a fight. It's like Bhagavad Gita just going on in our mind. Exactly what it is. As soon as you begin meditation, other thoughts will crowd together, gather force, and try to overwhelm the single thought to which you try to hold. This thought must gradually gain strength by repeated practice. This is the sadhana. When it has grown strong, the other thoughts will be put to flight. This is the battle always going on in meditation. So long as the ego lasts, effort is necessary. So you understand, he's talking about a fight and a battle. One thing about Sri Ramana Maharshi, which was plain to so many people who lived with him, who I've spoken with. They said that he is, I'm not using the past tense, he is completely traditional. And you can say Hindu, but the word really is Sanatana Dharma, meaning the eternal religion. But in the Hindu kind of cosmology, or because he would constantly be quoting from the scriptures. In a sense, he knew them. He even translated the Viveka Chudamani, which really talks about how to fight the battle of the mind. And he would talk about Bhagavad Gita, you know, what they say, Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra, the field of battle, which is should be our Dharma. Someone once asked him, should we be reading the Gita? And he said, it should be read daily.
Yeah,
and so...
I was actually just reading, and then it said, should we be reading the Bible, and said they're the same thing.
In fact, you know, when Bhagavan was a young boy, Aladdin school, he had two books. One was the Parayana, which is a collection of like morning and evening hymns, and devotional hymns. The second was the Holy Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it. In fact, it was just not a curious collection, because he went to that school and they kind of taught it. Because someone once asked him, what is moksha? What is that liberation, that what is that full awakening we're after? And then he quoted Psalm 46 from the Bible, where David says, Psalmist David says, be still and know that I am God. And of course that sounds very beautiful. Oh, know that I am God.
Mm-hmm.
But the human mind, that lower mind, where like Bhagavan says, that ego that needs to be conquered, overlooks the first part, be still.
Yeah.
That's the work, and it's a battle.
Yeah,
there's Bhagavan's words right there. It's a battle. So the quest is to find the type of sadhana that works for us.
Mm-hmm.
When I say works for us, I mean on an individual basis. Sri Anandamayi Ma used to always have this saying, she'd say, walk on. And the great Swami Bhaskaranand, who's just recently left his body, was one of her really closest intimate disciples of Swami's. And he would come here often. And actually, there's a reason why he came here. In 1952, he took sannyas. Mm-hmm. And as prior to sannyas, he was like Brahmacharya's doing the Gayatri Mantra, which is a 24-syllable mantra. And when and mother's sampradaya or mother's, you know, kind of lineage, when you became a Swami just prior to that, you did this practice which is called Mantra Puris Charnam, which is, it's a period of meditation that is, the Puris Charnam means it's a period of meditation of a certain number of mantra recitations. Mm-hmm. And what it is, it's 1 lakh or 100,000 malas for each syllable of the mantra. So it takes 2 to 3 years sitting in a kutir 14, 16 hours a day. They lock you up. You maybe walk in the sun for a few minutes. They bring your food. And you're doing now 100,000 malas. That's 108 times 100,000 times 24. And you don't do it like, you know, you got to do it very carefully and very nicely. And it takes a long time. But you see, at that time, Bhaskar, Bhaskar Nandaji, was mother's, in a sense, right-hand kind of attendant. He dealt with everything, travel arrangements, especially when people came, you know, and they were very abusive. They said, we want private rooms, and, you know, there weren't enough rooms anyway. And so people came to mother and said, Mother, how is Bhaskar Nandaji going to go away for 2 or 3 years? We won't manage. We maybe can keep it together for a little while, but not all this time. So she said, yeah, I understand. It's a problem. So she said to Bhaskar Nandaji himself, told me this. They were up in the north. Mm-hmm. And she said, you go down to Arunachala. And you do your sadhana, this mantra puris charnam, in the shadow, or we may call that, in the mandala of Arunachala. And the presence of Arunachala will cut the time in half. Now that doesn't mean that the grace of Arunachala Shiva will just say, okay, just cutting in half. What it means is Arunachala is going to condense everything. So 3 years of tapasya or fire is going to now be condensed into a year and a half. So it's going to get super hot. It's going to be, in a sense, like Paramahansa Nityananda of Kara said, what we're after is to boil away the dross of the mind. It's like water, just needs to evaporate. He said, what's the fastest way to boil water? You turn the heat up. Mm-hmm. So this is what it does. So especially when you're here, and you take, if you're praying to Bhagavan, you're praying to Arunachala, and you're saying, okay, like Bhagavan said, don't leave me half-baked. Finish the job. You get what you ask for, and you've got to be ready for it. And it's not pleasant. It's not blissful. But there is, Bhagavan is so merciful, really most people consider him like a mother. That you get, yes, you understand, the mind will start to have this turbulent kind of volcanic almost release. But it is a release. It is a purification. And so you just have to have, like what the Buddha said, the foremost virtue, which is patient perseverance. Patiently persevere. He said, the Buddha actually said, the foremost virtue is patient perseverance. The foremost is unbinding. And that's to unbind these modifications of the mind, unbind all the fetters that we tie ourselves with through all the desires and all our wants and all our fears and all our anger. Mm-hmm. So Bhagavan will do that. But you have to have a method. And so let's talk just a little about the different methods that Bhagavan promoted. And they were different for many people, because what would work for you is not what would work for that person, because a person's temperament, they have to kind of assimilate and, in a sense, enjoy it. So mother would say, walk on any way you like. But there's only one way, but you should like it. And what they mean by liking it, you need to develop respect, and you need to have, in a sense, almost adoration for the practice. Mm-hmm. It cannot be something that's grueling and, oh God, I've got to meditate again. And, you know, I really hate this, but somehow I know I should do it. Those thoughts will come and go. They're really from the lower mind. But it should be something that you have devotion to. Devotion to the practice itself. And how it happens is through repetition and then prayer. Mm-hmm. Because you're saying, help me. Be gracious unto me. You know, help me in this effort. And you do get a lot of grace. Mm-hmm. Because the effort unfurls the sail, like Sri Ramakrishna said. And the sail of your life, or the being, your mind, it gets filled with the wind of grace, and you feel it.